All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Fan Talk Thursday. I am joined by Keon Pasha. We're going to be talking about the Falcons. We're going to be talking about the signing of Bruce Irvin and much, much more.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a fan talk. We usually do these on Friday, but we're doing one a day early here. I am joined by Keon Pasha, currently a resident of Philadelphia. Unfortunately, he had to see another bird team win a championship last year. But Keon is here to talk with me about the Falcons. We're going to be talking about the Bruce Irvin signing. We're going to be talking about the possibility or the potential of Deion Jones' return to the lineup. And, of course, we'll touch upon this past week's win against Washington, as well as next week's upcoming matchup against Cleveland. But without any further ado, welcome to the show, Keon.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
So let's jump right into it. The big news today. I got this one wrong. Apparently people were coming for my throat on Twitter for getting this one wrong. But the Falcons wound up signing Bruce Irvin to a one-year, $1.5 million deal. Sort of what were your expectations, Keon? It seemed like a lot of Falcon fans were eagerly anticipating the Falcons potentially going after Bruce Irvin to bolster the pass rush. I'm curious if you were among them and sort of what was your reaction when you saw the news today that they signed him?
So when I saw it, I mean, I was pleased. I think it's pretty low risk. I know he got, I think, a little bit more than the minimum because there were other teams that were looking at him. But, you know, it will help. Anything at this point, I think, would help. But, I mean, he knows the system, so he should be able to jump in pretty quickly. And he's from the city. He's from Atlanta. So, you know, I think it's really a no lose for the Falcons. Hopefully it works out. If it doesn't, then they don't really, you know, they're in the same position that they are right now. They don't really lose much.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, the upside of it. You know, I'm not a huge fan of Bruce Irvin in terms of his ability, but obviously the Falcons need as much help to their pass rush as they possibly can get. I'll be curious to sort of see if he's relegated to just being a pure nickel pass rusher, sort of in the same way that Dwight Freeney was in 2016 and sort of what Tack was and Claiborne were last season. And so will the Falcons find times where they try to, you know, do they take Tack off the field? Do they take Vic off the field? And then how many opportunities will we see all three of those guys rushing the quarterback, potentially with Tack kicking inside alongside Grady Jarrett? And I'm also curious to sort of see if the Falcons use Irvin in the base defense, play him at some Sam linebacker, which would then bump Devondre Campbell back to the weak side linebacker position, particularly when Deion Jones comes back. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I'm curious what exactly the role that the Falcons sort of envision for Bruce Irvin. Is he going to be purely a pass rusher to help bolster that unit? Are they going to slowly start to mix him in and see what he can do and provide some value in base defense? I know one of the things that Bruce Irvin wasn't necessarily too keen on in Oakland was, you know, they tried to make him purely into a pass rusher this season as a defensive end after playing several years as a stand-up linebacker and in addition to his pass rush duties. So I'm curious if he's, you know, open to doing that as well as in Atlanta, or does he still want to be a pure pass rusher? So those are my questions, and we'll get an answer pretty shortly because it sounds like he's going to play this week against Cleveland.
Yeah, I think he's going to jump right in. I mean, I would hope that, you know, they can mix him in at the same time with Tack and Vic Beasley, at least for, you know, a NASCAR package or something like that, as some teams like to call it, on at least on obvious passing downs. And then, you know, at this point of his career, I don't know, like you said, how willing he will be to, you know, to always play the run or anything like that. But, you know, I think, you know, kicking Campbell over, you know, to the position where I think suits him the best, you know, I think it is a win-win for the Falcons. And I think, you know, it will give a little bit of a different look. It's really, everybody knows when Tack and Vic are in, kind of what they're going to be about. They're going to rush the pass. Their run defense isn't going to be as stout. So maybe having Irvin in there, give them something else to lease for other teams to scout kind of going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see sort of how, you know, like what they probably intend to do with him this weekend, you know, on a short week of practice. Probably won't be what they intend to do with him, you know, 4 weeks from now when he's, you know, had four games under his belt and been in the building for a month. So that's going to be an interesting sort of see to if his role gets changed or expanded in any major way. And probably a lot of that depends on how productive he is. You know, this is normally a move I would sort of nitpick, but I think generally speaking, this is a positive move for the Falcons overall. And, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, if they can get some solid production from Irvin as a pass rusher over these next 8 weeks, then, you know, it's definitely worth the money that they spent. And we'll just have to see sort of what he does.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
So we got more to come in talking about Deion Jones and maybe how he will also impact this defense down the stretch. But I do want to let you guys know about the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find one Locked On podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcast. You can find Locked On Hawks with host Brad Rowland, a recent guest of this Locked On Falcons show. Your NBA team every day. Now, we're looking forward to the Falcons going down this stretch run by increasing their performance and gaining a little bit of confidence. But maybe you too are looking to do those things, but not on the football field, in the bedroom. And you can do that by heading over to BlueChew.com. That's right, blue like the color blue, because BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. This stuff works. You can take it anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. And so just like the Falcons, you can be ready when the opportunity rises up. Blue Chew is prescribed online. It ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So you have no more in-person doctor's visits. You don't have to wait in line at the pharmacy. And you don't have to worry about the awkwardness anymore. Blue Chew is also made in the United States. And since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, there's a special offer for our Locked On Falcons listeners. All you got to do is visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Use that promo code Locked On and try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. So let's talk about Deion Jones' return. And, you know, he's returned to practice today. I didn't see if he was full participant or a limited participant. I'll have to check that. And I'm sure most of you guys listening know the answer to that. But did you happen to catch that, Keon?
I did. I believe he was limited. And Quinn said you won't really see him on the injury report right now because he's not technically on the active roster yet.
That's what I thought, but I didn't want to make any assumptions. So it seems like he's on pace to potentially return as early as that Week 11 game against Dallas, which is the game after this upcoming game against Cleveland. That's the earliest he could possibly return, but, you know, him coming back to practice does seem like, you know, that possibility. One thing that has been suggested to me is sort of given that the Falcons have a short week in week 12 going on Thanksgiving against the Saints, you know, it may make more sense for the Falcons to hold him out of that Dallas game and bring him back for that Saints game so that he doesn't have to come back and then have a short recovery time and, you know, maybe rest him fully and give him, you know, a full, you know, week and a half or two and a half weeks to get up to speed and play in that Saints game. I'm curious, sort of, do you have a favored timetable for when Deion Jones comes back, or are you of the mindset of the sooner we get him back, the better, and if that means him having a short week against New Orleans, then so be it?
I think, I mean, if the trainers believe that he's ready to go, team believes he's ready to go, then I would be fine with him coming back against Dallas. You know, Dallas is going to want to pound the ball a lot. Having him there will, I mean, it will take Duke Riley off the field for the most part, which is always, I guess, what people would think it's a plus. And then you got Olakun still there and Devondre, maybe Irvin, but it's really, it's kind of like the quarterback of the defense is kind of returned. So it will be a shot in the arm for the team the sooner he gets back. And I think it will kind of, the team will play better on defense whenever he's there. So that's why I do kind of believe the sooner the better, you know, would be beneficial.
I'm curious, what sort of things are you expecting to see from this defense with Deion Jones in the lineup? I know there was a question someone asked me on one of the Q&As a couple of weeks ago. And, like, my initial thought is sort of like the one thing that you can definitely count on Deion Jones helping out this defense is particularly their ability to cover running backs out of the backfield. Yes. And be a little bit better at making some of those open field stops and not have as many breakdowns that we've seen, particularly with Riley manning that middle spot. And it probably will help Campbell play better because Deion Jones is much more capable of sort of covering some of Campbell's mistakes than necessarily any other guys that we have. And it will allow Campbell to sort of do the things that he's really good at. So I'm curious, do you sort of agree with that statement, or are there other areas where you're expecting Deion Jones to have a major impact?
I do agree with that. I mean, just his speed alone, especially early in the year, we were getting beat pretty badly with passes to the running back. And like you said, for Thanksgiving, so Kamara will be involved there. But I also think the overall communication of the team will be a little bit better. It's sort of like everybody, at least in that linebacking group, will kind of settle back into their roles that they have, not overextend themselves of things that they're not used to doing, because you see that didn't really work out that well. It hasn't, at least this part of the year. So, you know, I do think, you know, his speed will help with the running backs. And then also the overall communication of the defense, I think, will improve as well, because they were kind of searching for guys to put the green dot on, mm-hmm. As the, you know, right, as the defense calls were coming in. It's like, well, we know now, you know, Deion's going to get those calls and he'll be able to, you know, line everybody up the way they should be in. You know, hopefully the results would improve. You know, you would hope so, but at least the communication of, you know, where guys should be lined up, you know, that should, you know, be increased, I believe.
Yeah, I think I'm curious also, what are your thoughts on sort of, do you feel like the presence of Deion Jones and in addition now with Bruce Irvin, how good are you sort of expecting this defense to be now? Are you, obviously we're all expecting improvement from being, you know, whatever they are, 28th or 30th best in the league. And I'm just curious sort of how high do you think the ceiling is for this defense now?
I think it will help. I mean, look, no matter what, the two safeties are out for the year. And, you know, so you have a big communicator and leader in Ricardo, and then a thumper and just overall terrific player with Keanu. And those guys won't be back no matter what. So, you know, I do think they'll improve. You know, maybe Deion will help a little bit with the run defense, although that's not always really his forte either. But I think it will improve. It won't be, you know, as you mentioned before, I don't think an all-time bad defense anymore. It will be, I'm hoping for mediocre, you know, going forward, because even with Irvin and an increased pass rush, maybe some better coverage because of Jones, if they're just average, that would go a long way because the offense is picking up steam.
Yeah, it would be nice. And this hasn't necessarily been the case the last 2 weeks, although it was a little bit of the case in the Giants game, but not as much in Washington. It would be nice that in the third and fourth quarters, when the Falcons are up 2 scores, that you don't always know that the defense is going to give up a touchdown on the ensuing drive. That's going to give us, you know, the usual heart attack and high blood pressure medicine type of things that has been pretty consistent. And, you know, that was kind of a consistent thing even when the defense was fully healthy in previous years. But it seems like it's become even a bigger issue this season, where it's just like it's guaranteed. You know, when Cincinnati got the ball back after the Falcons kicked that field goal, and it's like, you know, if the Falcons kick a field goal, Cincinnati's going to go down and get a touchdown. So they needed a touchdown at that point. And, you know, we saw that get played out and AJ Green make that game winning sort of reception.
Yeah, it was tough. So I think overall things will start to get, you know, better, to where at least, you know, you're hoping that you know, you're up two scores in the fourth quarter. You know, it's not going to be a nail biter, but you just never know with these guys.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. You know, obviously the offense is going to be the thing that carries us through the rest of the season. But if the defense isn't a massive liability, particularly late in games when the offense we expect will have some leads or have some opportunities to gain some leads, and the defense can get some stops and whatnot. So I think that's my hope for right now, which is probably, you know, it'll all said and done, it'll probably balance out to be average or slightly below average defense. But we'll have to see. And it does seem like the team is sort of gearing up for a nice little run down the stretch. And, you know, these moves, you know, as me as the typical party pooper, you know, I can't get as excited as most people are. But I think there's reason for people to be a little optimistic and a little, you know, a little bit of buzz in Atlanta for the first time this season.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, the Quinn's track record is, for the most part, has shown that the team has improved in the second half of the year. And, you know, hopefully if we have a lead in the fourth quarter, you know, having a guy like Bruce Irvin, you know, will help, because they know, you know, that the team's going to have to pass. So, you know, having an extra guy, because sometimes McKinley and Vic Beasley, they look gassed at the end of these games. And, you know, there's not really another guy who really strikes fear to the quarterback, you know, I need to get rid of the ball quickly. I don't know if Brooks Reed is always, you know, if that spin move isn't working that day, then, you know, the quarterback will have a lot of time, especially if Tack or Beasley aren't on the field. So hopefully, you know, things will begin to improve.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, it especially pains me to say this, but it does seem like Brooks Reed hit the wall this season in terms of his effectiveness. You know, in terms of his role playing abilities. So, you know, that particularly hurts my heart. but we got more to come. We'll talk about last week's game against Washington, as well as this week's game against Cleveland, in just a moment. But I do want to plug the two draft related shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. First up is Locked On NFL Draft with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. You can also check out the Draft Dudes podcast with hosts Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino. You can find both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as on thedraftnetwork.com, and find other written content and great content at that website. Your NFL draft every day. So, Keon, let's talk about last week's game. You know, we won't spend too much time talking about Washington, that win, but sort of what was your main takeaway from that performance, watching that game, or one of the things that may have surprised you, that you were expecting something different going into the game but changed after the game?
So I was pretty impressed with the run defense. Peterson had come in, and I know he's aged really in general, but he's come in off of some good games, and they really shut him down, and their run defense hasn't really been great all year. But they really took care of business at that, you know, that facet of the game. And I kind of had in my mind where if they were able to get up on the Redskins, I didn't really think they're not really built to come back like that. You don't think of Alex Smith as the guy who's going to bring your team back from multiple touchdowns. He's really, if you're in the lead with Smith, you know, your team is actually probably in pretty good shape. But if he has to bring a team back, it was difficult. So, you know, in the pass rush, while the sacks, you know, didn't look like a lot, there was a ton of holding calls in that game, which could have been sacks. So, all in all, I really did think it was a pretty good performance. Obviously, the offense looked really good. Ryan looked really good. The slant to Ridley, and he took it all the way. Showed the speed really that you know that he's known for. So, I did think it was a pretty impressive win. Probably the best that they've looked really all year.
Yeah, I think, you know, with in regard to the pass rush, I don't think it was an overwhelming dominant performance from the Falcons pass rush, But I do think that the times where they are able to get pressure were in a lot of key situations that led to the Redskins not being able to convert some third downs or getting behind the chains at various points, or when they would start to get some momentum through the air, the pass rush would step up and disrupt the play and sort of throw things off. So while you wouldn't necessarily look at the game and be like, oh yeah, the pass rush was dominant in the game, when it mattered, it seemed like the pass rush more often than not was stepping up and making plays, which is something we haven't necessarily seen for most of this season.
Yeah, I mean, and they really had no excuse not to. I mean, they were down to zero linemen really left in the game for that were available for the Redskins, so they really had to get to Smith with a bunch of backups in there, and sort of what we talked about before, we're having to hold your breath late in the game. It was almost that tipping point. I believe it was Capri Bibbs who scored for the Redskins. Yeah. It's just, okay, well, if we don't score here, it could get a little bit interesting. And but they, to their credit, they did come down, and eventually they did put the game away. And it was a rare, kind of relaxing win for a change, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, yeah. That Bibbs touchdown, they cut it to two scores, and then the Falcons, I think, had a three and out right after that. And you were like, oh, here we go again. And then I think the defense, it was like at the last drive in the third quarter, I think they had like two plays at the end of the third quarter and a couple plays at the beginning of the fourth. And, I think Shelby had a tackle for loss on one of those plays. And then I can't remember who got pressure, but there was a passing down later on where maybe it was Crawford or somebody got pressure, or Jack got pressure or something like that. And the Redskins were forced to punt, and then the Falcons went on that long drive to sort of put the game away at that point. So, yeah, that is not something that we have grown accustomed to seeing in Atlanta in both regards, in terms of the defensive stand as well as the Falcons offense, going out there and executing one of these seven-minute drives. We've seen so many times where other teams have been able to execute those drives against us, but for them to basically go out there and just basically milk away half the fourth quarter and any chance of Washington coming back at that point was pretty much, zero. That is not necessarily something that we've seen consistently. And I think that was one of the questions I think I talked about on a previous episode, where if the Falcons needed to run the football more effectively in order to, hide the fact that their defense isn't good. And I don't know if that drive in particular was one where they were, running the football a whole lot. They probably did run the ball pretty effectively on that drive, if I recall. But, for just the combination of things of milking clock, moving the ball, and playing good defense is just not something we've seen at all this season. So it was nice to see that.
Yeah, that actually stood out as well. The run game in general, the Redskins are pretty stout against the run. And the Falcons ran the ball well. And Coleman, actually, he broke another run later in the game that was called back for penalty. Mm-hmm. So that stood out to me as well. The other thing that stood out actually is Sherrod Neesman. I thought he played well. And even, there was actually some of the Redskins made some really tough catches against him. So they completed passes against him, but he was right there. He had a couple of breakups, and I would prefer to see him, I think, over Richards, I think, going forward. And it seems like the Falcons may prefer that as well.
Yeah.
Because Neesman seems to be getting more time, as the season goes on.
Yeah, I didn't chart it, but it did seem like the Falcons split it up where Richards was playing in the base defense while Neesman was getting pretty much all the nickel reps in that game when they split it up. So, I think you're right there. So let's talk about the upcoming Browns game, and I'm curious if you're expecting some of the things that we saw against Washington, and in particular those positives that we just discussed. Do you feel like, how confident are you that those things will continue to carry over this week? Because you have a Browns team where the matchup is kind of similar, where the strength of their offense is their running backs with Nick Chubb and Duke Johnson, and in sort of a short passing game with Jarvis Landry. You're not really expecting Baker Mayfield to attack you deep, just like you're not really expecting Alex Smith to do that. And then you have a pretty good defense. I know some stats indicate that the Browns have a really bad defense, but there's a lot of stats. There's a lot more stats once you go, a little bit deeper under the surface, rather than just looking at points allowed and yards allowed to indicate that they have one of the better defenses in the NFL. So I'm curious, do you feel like last week's performance against Washington will get a similar performance this week against Cleveland?
I do. I think that the Falcons lucked out a little bit that Chris Thompson was out for the Redskins, because they're going to get Duke Johnson this time, and Deion Jones won't be back yet. So, you know, since their kind of coaching overhaul with Cleveland, they've been featuring Duke Johnson a lot more now. So he's going to get the ball a lot, swing passes, dump downs, things like that. Tackling is going to have to be, you know, really on point for them. But I do think that it's a good team for the Falcons to play right now, similar to the Redskins also, where I think if they're able to get a lead, they will be able to hold it. The secondary, I believe I read it, is pretty banged up for the Browns. I think Denzel Ward is out, who is, you know, their really good corner. But their pass rush is still pretty good. So Schrader and Jake Matthews, they played well last week. That'll have to continue. But I don't think that the Browns are really going to be able to match up with everything that the Falcons can throw at them offensively.
I do think, from what I hear, Ward is expected to play, but I know
he is okay.
Demarius Randall's beat up. I know E.J. Gaines is in the concussion protocol. I don't know if he's going to get cleared before Sunday. So they do have some injuries in the secondary. And Ward is dealing with a hip injury, so he's not 100%, but expectation from what I hear is that he will play. So that'll be an interesting battle. I think the thing that the Falcons will have to avoid, because I think this game has a little bit of the symptoms of a trap game, is, like you said, I think if they get off to a fast start, they should be okay, which is typically the case when they play on the road. But this Browns team is, the best team in the league so far at creating turnovers. And, you know, those are sort of those unpredictable elements of the game where if all of a sudden, you know, a couple of tip passes, a couple of deflections or an uncharacteristic fumble here or there, you know, Myles Garrett beats Jake Matthews around the edge and strips Matt Ryan from behind, all of a sudden, you know, a couple of early turnovers could get this team off to a slow start and allow Cleveland to stay in it and get the Falcons maybe playing a little bit, you know, instead of being able to set the tempo for the game, maybe allow the Browns to set it a little bit. And so I think that's the thing that they have to avoid. But obviously, I think the Falcons have the weapons and the talent to avoid that trap. But we'll just have to see if they can do it.
Yeah, it's really just I'm not sure the Browns are going to be able to get gigantic chunk plays on offense against Atlanta. So it's really, can you get off the field on third down? You know, are they third and two, third and threes? Can you stop that? Maybe can you stuff Nick Chubb? Can you stop a swing pass to Duke Johnson or something underneath to Jarvis Landry? Or their tight end, Njoku, he's a good player. So, I mean, they're loaded with first-round, you know, pedigree guys all around, you know, the team, obviously, because they're bad every year. So they get, you know, high picks. But it's can they put it together for a full game? You know, we'll see. And can Mayfield, is he going to be able to, are they going to be able to score enough, really, to beat Atlanta? I'm not, and they haven't really done that all year.
Yeah.
Not put enough points where they can, you know, consistently run with an offense like Atlanta. So I don't think it's going to be all that. If it was in Atlanta, I think, it would be, I'd feel a little bit different. But, you know, going up there, away again, and their crowd is usually pretty good, so you can't take anything for granted, really. And they're a young team, so if they're in it and they continue to feel good about themselves, you know, then there could be some trouble there.
Yeah, I think the concern you have to have is the Falcons beating themselves, you know, as opposed to the Browns going out there and beating them. But you know, that's been part of the problem, and that's one of the reasons why you hope that these last two games against the Giants and Washington is this team sort of turning a corner and starting to play like the team, the playoff caliber team, and in some people's eyes, the Super Bowl caliber team that people thought going into the season that they were, and really we didn't see consistently over those first 6 weeks of the season, outside of a drive here or a quarter here or whatnot. And so because they haven't necessarily played that way consistently week in and week out, there is still that gnawing concern in the back of my mind that, you know, we could get a dud, another road game dud from the Falcons, just because we've seen that twice, you know, relatively. I wouldn't necessarily say the Eagles game was a dud, but it certainly did not live up to expectations. But the Steelers game definitely was a dud for the Falcons. And that's my main concern right now. It's like, oh, is that team going to come back, or is this truly a new team? And I think this game is a perfect opportunity where you're facing, you know, a pretty lackluster Browns team that really has no ability, you know, on paper, at least, to match up with you. And so if you can go out, if you can beat the 5-2 Redskins team, you know, 38-14, then you should have no problem doing the same thing against the Browns team. And that's sort of what I'm looking forward to seeing. But obviously, you know, it's not going to be like, oh man, the Falcons didn't beat the Browns 42-7. They stink or anything like that. But it's just, you know, what do they have to do to find a way to win? And, you know, winning ugly at this point is, you know, you'd rather not see it, but you got to take what you can get.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked at the schedule at the beginning of the year, I mean, even prior to all the injuries, and you kind of saw the Redskins, which I didn't think were even going to have the record they did at the time, and then the Cleveland game, and then Dallas before going to New Orleans. I think this is a time where you need to stack the wins. And if you want to be a good team or think of yourself as one, these are the games that you'll need to handle, I think.
Yeah. So, Keon, is there anything else you want to share with us before we duck out?
I mean, I think we covered it all. You know, I think that the team is trending up now, I would say. And like Quinn says, that maybe their best ball is still ahead of them for this year. And I probably do believe that actually as well, you know, as guys kind of get settled in their roles because they're going to be playing more because of the injuries and Jones coming back. So, you know, just, you know, look forward to the rest of the season and, you know, hoping for the best.
Okay. Keon, let the people know if they want to chat more Falcons with you on Twitter or other social media platforms where they can find you.
So I have the Twitter account is kpasha7, and sometimes, you know, checking on different Atlanta sports, tweeting out or retweeting, you know, different highlight clips and, you know, different things even from yourself, Aaron, you know, a take here or there that I may favorite or something like that. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Appreciate that. So, Keon, I appreciate you coming on as well. Look forward to chatting with you. Look forward to seeing those retweets and be like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And look forward to seeing if this Falcon team is, you know, as you say, poised to start playing, you know, high-level football as opposed to Falcon. I don't want to dunk too hard on the Falcons, though. They're fine. If this is a turning point for this team and we can sort of, you know, have some positivity for once on this podcast going into these games, not feeling like, oh, you know, they're bound to choke one of these or anything like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of the season brings and look forward to hearing your thoughts in the future as well on that very subject as well. So thank you again and have a good night.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Take care.
So, guys, another Fan Talk in the books. If you want to provide your feedback, you can do so to me on Twitter. I'm at FalcFans. Of course, the show's Twitter handle is Locked On Falcons. If it's podcast related, might as well just send it on over there. You can also check us out on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can send us an email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com, as well as leave a comment at falcfans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So tomorrow we'll do a Q&A. So if you have a question, send them to those aforementioned addresses, accounts, and platforms. And we'll wrap up this week with a Q&A. We'll come back Monday morning with a rapid reaction to this Browns game. And we'll keep this thing a-rolling as the Falcons hopefully keep their playoff hopes a-rolling. So until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.